4 weeks ago, we started into the New Testament. And so let me find the page number. I think it's, I tell you what, I want you to start again on page 211 of your book. And can probably turn to Matthew. We're going to introduce the four Gospels and continue with that. So I don't know if I'll look at anything specifically, but we may get to that. So if you want to turn there to Matthew 1, that's fine. And I'm not going to go back over what we did with Matthew, but I do want to give you what I think are the key differences in these Gospels. So you've got four Gospels in your New Testament. And these are four books that describe the life and ministry of the Son of God becoming man. Okay, taking on flesh and then living among us and dwelling among us. And so we have four witnesses who have researched his time on this earth, and they've given to us through the Holy Spirit truth about the way he lived, the way he talked, the way he dealt with people, the way he healed. And it's pretty amazing that we've got these resources. So there's four of those that are called the Gospels. Now, 4 weeks ago, we introduced these. I'm going to kind of just abbreviate here quickly. And what I want to try to do is it helps me to keep in mind a key word or theme. Because there's four different Gospels that tell the same story from different angles and different perspectives. So what I said 4 weeks ago with Matthew, kind of keep this in mind. Matthew is, of the four gospel accounts, is the one that we would consider more of the Jewish gospel. So Matthew includes more Old Testament quotations and references than Mark, Luke, or John, because he's writing to a Jewish audience. And his purpose in this gospel is to convince the Jewish people that Jesus is the Messiah. Now, if you're trying to convince a Jewish person that Jesus is their long-awaited Messiah, you need to use their authoritative sources to prove that. That's what Matthew does. So he takes their Old Testament and pulls a lot of quotations out trying to convince the Jewish people that this man from Nazareth fulfills what you've learned growing up as a Jewish person. So Matthew is what I consider the Jewish gospel. Okay, it's more of a Jewish audience. And I think we said that at the bottom of page 211. He writes this to the Jews. And then the rest of that, we talked about prophecies of the Old Testament, promised Messiah. And I would say the key distinction in Matthew is he also focuses on the teachings. Now, it doesn't mean that Mark, Luke, and John don't focus as much on his teaching, but Matthew in particular has a lot of the parables, okay, the teaching. And I didn't do this last week, but I'm just going to put this up here now. You can look it up later, or if you're interested, I can show it to you later. Matthew actually includes five discourses. Okay, five, if your New Testament is printed in red ink for words Jesus spoke, you're going to find in Matthew five times there's a large chunk of red where Jesus was teaching the multitudes, because he's emphasizing the teaching ministry of the Messiah. So like, for example, in chapter 13 is one of these five. And it's a whole long series of parables. I mean, it's parable after parable after parable that Matthew includes with the teachings. So if I were on Jeopardy and the question came up about which of the four Gospels has more of a Jewish flavor, the answer is, what is Matthew? Right? Okay, that's what he is after. We talked about that 4 weeks ago. Oh, and another example with that, with these discourses, it's also in Matthew you find the Sermon on the Mount. Now, Luke also includes an account of that, but Matthew really emphasizes the teaching. So keep that in mind as you go through and read through Matthew. Now, Mark, did we start it into Mark, didn't we, 4 weeks ago? Or did we finish it? I,
I can't remember if we finished it, but I think we started into Mark. All right, let me see where I left off up here on the screen. Right there, perfect timing. All right, so a couple of things I would say about Mark. First of all, in the New Testament, this is the man who, I don't know, you might say his, I'm going to kind of say full name or first or middle name, the way we think of it in English. This is the one in the New Testament called John Mark. But his nickname and what he was known by was simply Mark. So the gospel that you have, the second gospel, is by this guy named John Mark. Now, this is not a real big deal thing right now, but just so you'll know, it is believed that Mark got the bulk of his information for his gospel from Peter. And early church fathers actually state that Mark met with, and I can't remember the early church father's name, I want to say Irenaeus, but I'm probably wrong, but he actually met, or an early church father said he actually met with Peter and got the bulk of his information from Peter to give to us this apostolic teaching of the gospel. Now, that's small stuff. Here's a big deal thing for Mark, for me, and this might help you too. If you haven't thought about this before, Mark includes the word immediately more than any other gospel writer. So what you find as you read through Mark, he will transition from one, let's say from one teaching or one miracle or something like that, and then we'll say, and immediately, boom. Or sometimes the English translation is straightway. Okay, straightway or immediately. So what that tells us is Mark, I think, is writing with a bit more urgency with his gospel. Because over and over, it's almost like Mark says, listen, y'all, I ain't got time to stop and breathe. I just got to tell you quick, because it's urgent. Okay, it's a fast-moving gospel. And so you'll find the word immediately a lot in Mark's gospel. So let me stop there now, since that's where we are, and keep that in mind. Let's see, I think we started last time, and I don't know exactly where I stopped here. Historical evidence, we think that Mark wrote his gospel to people in Rome. He may have written it, in fact, while he was in Rome. He explains Jewish terms and customs. Okay, remember, Matthew doesn't have to explain those. He's writing to Jewish people. They understand it. Mark, though, writing to Romans, to more Gentiles, he can't just use Jewish terminology and expect the people to understand it. He's not Jewish people. So Mark, a lot of times, will have to explain some of the Jewish terminology used. So he explains Jewish terms and customs. As a fast-moving account, Mark will give you the simple facts of Jesus' life. Okay. Mark is that guy that years ago, I think it was a lady in the news or something, and she said, ain't nobody got time for that. Okay, that's Mark. Okay, Mark is like, look, I ain't got time to talk more about it right now. It's urgent. I'm going to give you the simple facts. Now, that's also why, I might get this wrong, isn't Matthew like 28 chapters? I think Luke is 24. John is 21. Is that right? What's Mark? 16. Right? I ain't got time for that. Right? That's Mark. It's an urgent, immediately, boom, boom, boom. Okay? He gives you the facts, and he moves on. He doesn't give a lot of interpretation of the facts. And this is where the Peter part comes in. As Mark writes... Oh, I guess I skipped this part. No, hold on. I went ahead too far. All right, here we go. As Mark writes, every time he writes, he gives either an eyewitness account or comes from an eyewitness perspective. And that gives us even more reason to believe, as the early church father said, that he was getting his information from Peter, because Peter was an eyewitness to everything that Mark writes in this gospel. All right, now I get to the second paragraph, and I had hit the button too many times. One of Mark's key words. Did we do this 4 weeks ago, or is this new now? This is new. All right. One of Mark's key words is the Greek word that is translated in different ways in translations, either straightway or immediately. And that's what I said earlier. You don't find that Matthew, Luke, or John will transition between things using that word like Mark does. And I'm just going to flip. I'm just going to flip randomly here to a page. And let's see. I probably won't find one since I just said that. But I promise you it's in here a lot. Yeah. Well, you see in your book, as you read through it, I think it's, was it 40 times? 40 times in these chapters, you will find that Mark will transition with, and immediately, and then he moves on. And because I said that, I can't find any right now. But right there, okay, so in chapter 6, 45. So this is right after feeding the 5,000, verse 45. And immediately, he made his disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him. Now, Matthew might say, and once they finished and sent the people away, they got into a boat. But Mark's like, and immediately we jump to the next thing. So you see that a lot in Mark's account. So about 40 times it says here. And because of that and how he writes, that's where you find the sense of urgency. In some ways, now we're going to see this with John. John writes for you to get saved. He flat out says that. That is a reason for his gospel. But it's almost like Mark, as he writes with urgency, is trying to convince the reader, I don't care where you are from, I don't care your ethnicity, I don't care your culture, you need to be saved now. Okay, it's an urgency to his writing. Jews, Romans, Greeks, the time to come to Christ is now. And what you can do, I forgot I did this. Did I tell it? I think I told y'all this. Remember I told you that sometimes when I read through, if there's a key word, I'll put like a letter in the margin so I can find them. And I just remember, I did that in Mark. So for example, everywhere the word immediately appeared, I put a capital I in the margin by that verse. So if I go back to chapter 6, verse 27, immediately the king sent an executioner. Verse 45, it immediately made his disciples. Verse 50, they saw him and were frightened, but immediately he spoke with them. Verse 54, and when they had come into the boat, immediately. Okay, all through his account. And I forgot I had marked all those immediately. So that's a neat thing to do. When you read through Mark, take a capital I every time you see immediately, or if your translation is straightway, either way, mark something. And then all you got to do is just flip through it. You can find every time he transitions from scene to scene. Chapter 9, verse 15. And immediately when the entire crowd saw him, verse 20, they brought the boy to him. When he saw him, immediately the spirit threw him down. See, that's Mark. Urgent. You know, kind of fast-paced. I ain't got time for that. 16 chapters, boom, let's move on. Because you need it now. Doesn't matter who you are. You need to hear this story of who Jesus is. And that is distinct in Mark. Now look at the last part of this, and I'm going to be quiet so you can ask or add anything. What is different about where Mark begins his story and where Matthew and Luke begin theirs? People don't think about this. The Gospels are different. Okay, Matthew chose to start the way he started. Luke chose to start the way he started. John really starts his weird. And Mark, because he's a lot shorter and condensed, leaves all of Christmas out. So, ooh, wow. What's wrong with that dude? He ain't got time for that. I mean, honest. I mean, right? Look, here's what you need to know. So what happens is between Matthew and Luke both include the Christmas story. They start with the birth of the Messiah. And Matthew, being very Jewish, is going to convince you from Jewish scriptures that this is the Messiah we've been waiting for. Matthew gives the account of the wise men, the dreams to Joseph and Mary. Luke gives the account of the shepherds, the traditional Christmas story. And then you turn to Mark chapter 1 and say, well, let me see what Mark says about it. Mark says, I'm telling you, I ain't got time for that. He's been born, he's here, he's 30 years old. let me tell you when he started his ministry. Okay, that's where Mark starts. So Mark starts with his baptism by John at the start of his earthly ministry. Different starting point. Okay, I think I just raced through that summary of Mark. So give me anything you want to add to that. Ask about that. I know Andy's laughing like he needs some water. His tongue's hanging out. Yesterday I was doing some teaching for a couple of hours and I forgot my water bottle, Andy, and it was hanging out. It's like trying to find a 5 gallon bucket I could drink out of, but couldn't find one. All right, anything from Mark? Like, hey man, that's pretty neat. Didn't know that. Wish you hadn't told me that. You know, something. All right, seems like y'all are in agreement so far on Mark. I'm glad you don't want to change the Word of God. That is good. Let's go then to Luke. All right, what is different about Luke? Here's what I would say about Luke. Just something to keep in mind as we go through this. So Luke, yeah, I guess I should capitalize G. Luke is a Gentile physician. That's high up, ain't it? I mean, now we didn't gone from Matthew was a tax collector. Everybody hated him. But the dude got saved and life changed. Pretty neat. I don't even know if we know as much about Mark, but we do know who Luke was. He was a doctor. You know those ones that make lots of money and don't usually know what's wrong, but they give you medicine anyway? I'm playing. I'm thankful for the medical field. I'm not trying to, but it does get aggravating sometimes. You probably would agree, especially when insurance is involved.
Amen.
Okay. So Luke, in his day and time, was Dr. Luke. He was a physician. Now, what that tells us, the way I see it, Matthew is going to write more to a Jewish audience. Mark, we know, is very urgent, you know, kind of quick-paced, getting information from an eyewitness. Pretty neat. Luke, as he writes, don't be surprised if every now and then he throws in big words. Why? Because he has a physician's vocabulary. So here's what's interesting in Luke. Some of those times when Jesus healed somebody, you look what Matthew says about it, or Mark, if it's in there, because they don't all include the same. And then read Luke's version. And you'll find that sometimes Luke uses vocabulary coming from his physician background, or he'll describe an illness that the others don't describe. Why? Because the dude has been to school. He knows some of the language and concepts that the others don't. So he's using his unique personality as he describes Jesus' life. So Luke, let's see what they entitled this section here. Luke, they entitled Behold the Man. Let me do this too. Luke also, I'm just going to write Paul up here. Luke also was a traveling companion of the Apostle Paul. Oh, that's another good point. Thank you, John, for reminding me. I saw him look up and it made me think of it. In case you don't know this, Luke also wrote the book of Acts. Now, what's interesting is Luke travels with Paul on some of his missionary journeys. So in the book of Acts, sometimes you will find Luke use the word we or us because he's part of the traveling party with Paul. And we'll get to Acts, but just keep that in mind for now. So this is almost like Act 1 of Luke's writing about Jesus' life. And this is Act 2 of what happened after his resurrection. Luke provides both of these. And I'll give you a little tiny piece of trivia here. I think I'm right on this. If somebody asks you, who wrote the largest amount of the New Testament? All right. Your initial thought is the Apostle Paul, because he wrote 13 letters of 27. However, by volume, Luke wrote the largest amount of your New Testament, because the book of Luke is 24 chapters. Book of Acts is 28, I think, something like that. So if you go by volume, Luke actually wrote more of your New Testament than even Paul, but Paul wrote more books. So that's just a little tidbit there in case it made your belly button feel good tonight. All right, so the Gospel according to Luke. Now, look in the very first verse of Luke. Actually, the first few verses. Sorry. This has always been strange to me. When Luke starts his Gospel, he addresses it to an individual. Really strange. Luke says, "Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile an account of the things accomplished among us." Okay, a lot of people have written about this man from Nazareth. Luke says, just as they've done that, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and servants of the word, they've handed them down to us. Here's what Luke says. And you can almost sense that doctor mentality. Like, his language a little more refined as he communicates. He says, and it also seemed fitting to me as well. It's kind of got that about it. "Having investigated everything carefully from the beginning to write it out for you in consecutive order, and here is who his book is addressed to, most excellent Theophilus." Whoa, hold on now. Who in the world is Theophilus? See, the entire book of Luke was written to one person. Now, Matthew doesn't say that. Mark doesn't say that. John doesn't say that. But Luke says, "I'm writing this after investigating and researching," right? Smart dude, physician. You know, he studies. He knows what he's talking about. Investigated and interviewed eyewitnesses. "I'm writing for you now a very clear account so you can understand everything that's happened from this man from Nazareth. Theophilus, your book says," and this is as good a guess as any, "that Theophilus probably was some kind of Roman official." Remember that Luke, as a Gentile, again, not really, you know, writing to Jewish per se, he's writing to probably a Gentile official or leader. Now, Theophilus, again, this is piecing it together. We don't know for sure this is what happened, but piecing it together. It almost appears, the way Luke starts his gospel, that Theophilus, somewhere along the way, had gotten saved. Now, as an aside, wouldn't you love to see officials in Washington, D.C. all of a sudden just get saved and start changing their policies? Wouldn't that be something? That's what happened. This dude, along the way, probably heard about this miracle worker. Somebody shared the gospel with him, and it appears he believed. He got saved. Once he gets saved, as your book says here, Luke then decides, you know what? I'm going to send you an official treatise as a leader of Rome. I'm going to send you an official document, treatise, gospel account, so you can better understand the details of what happened when Jesus came to this earth. Okay, that's what Luke is setting out to do. Book says he wanted him to know and understand the details of his faith. And if you look in verse 4, okay, "I'm writing this to you, most excellent Theophilus," which appears to be kind of a title for this leader. "Here's the reason. So that you might know the exact truth about the things you've been taught." Somewhere along the way, Theophilus has heard about this man named Jesus. And now Luke is going to give him more information. Book continues and says, "Perhaps Theophilus had requested from Luke a formal written record of Jesus' life." He could have. "Writing to this government official made Luke's gospel then a public record. And because it was a public record, it would have only been expected then that it would have been copied and distributed to other people." Okay, Luke, God has Luke in a strategic place as a physician, somehow in a place where he knows perhaps this Roman official is able to write the exact details of Jesus' life to this official who's a believer, it appears, and now it gets distributed through probably this guy's connections. That is what Luke, that's the purpose, I think, with Luke. Now, let me finish. Oh, we're probably not going to finish. Well, we might finish. Couple things about Luke that stand out. First of all, as you continue adding to your list of specifics here,
I would also add that while Matthew does include the story of the Magi and the dreams that Joseph, Matthew, and Mary have, it is Luke that really focuses in on the Christmas story. Now, shepherds, swaddling clothes, manger. Okay, this is all from Luke because Luke is writing the details. I want you to know the exact truth about what you've been taught. So he gives a little bit more detail. He gives more detailed account of the birth than the other disciples or other gospels do. He does repeat many events and teachings that you find in Matthew and Luke. But while some of what you find in Matthew, Mark, while you do find some repeated, there's also some unique information that the others do not include. So I'm going to ask you, let me ask you so I can stop talking for a minute. This is a good trivia question. Matthew, Mark, and Luke record a lot of the same stories, a lot of the same incidents, miracles, teaching that Jesus had. Can you think, just throwing it out there, can you think of anything that's in Luke's gospel that is not in Matthew or Mark, since these are so parallel? Just anything come to mind? That's in John, I think. I think it's in John.
Don't you question her.
Uh-oh. Well, if she's wrong, she's going to hit you. I think John mentions the crown of thorns. Think of a story.
Was it a Christmas story about Jesus?
The Magi.
That's Matthew. What's in Luke that's not in Matthew or Mark? Or John, but he's a different character. We're going to see that in a little bit.
You say Luke wrote about the Baha'u'llah Christmas.
Zacharias.
Okay.
Zacharias.
Right. Zacchaeus.
Zacharias.
Zacharias, angel, with the birth of John the Baptist. John the Baptist's birth is only told in Luke. It's not in Matthew, Mark, or John. Okay, that's one. We got a couple big ones here. When you hear them, you're going to be like, oh, shoot, I didn't realize that. Anything else come to mind? So the birth of John the Baptist with Zacharias and Elizabeth. Yes, that is only in Luke.
Zacchaeus.
Do you have my notes? No, I'm just playing. Now, listen, but did you think about, have you realized that? The story of the wee little man who climbed up the sycamore tree is only in Luke. See, Matthew, they repeat some, but there's unique stuff only in Luke. So, birth of John the Baptist, Zacharias, Zacchaeus in the tree. There's also a very famous parable that is only in Luke. I'll let you off the hook this time, Andy. Rich man and Lazarus. You know what? I think that is only in Luke. I think. All right, how about this? Prodigal son. The story of the prodigal son is only in Luke. Not in Matthew, not in Mark. But it's in Luke. So the point is, Luke, I think, includes some, the others don't, because he is trying to give Theophilus a more detailed account of the exact truth of what happened. So a lot of repetition, but Luke also has some unique material as well. And let me check something real quick here. I want to make sure on that. Yes, Andy, Luke 16 is a rich man and Lazarus. The rest of y'all failed miserably. I just want to tell y'all that. But the hard one was John the Baptist and Zacharias. That's where you get extra credit. Wow. That was really, really good. All right. Last thing, and I guess we'll probably... I can't even see what time it is up there. Last thing. If someone were to ask you, what is a theme of the book of Luke? I believe that the answer would be chapter 19...
and verse 10. So here's what you find in Luke chapter 19, verse 10. Luke records Jesus saying this, and this is after Zacchaeus up in the tree. And Jesus says in verse 9, today salvation has come to this house because he too is a son of Abraham. And here's what Jesus then adds. And this is the theme of the Gospel of Luke. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. Now, your book doesn't point this out, but you also find that Luke puts a lot of emphasis on the outcast of his day. He also puts a lot of emphasis on the seeking, right? That's a theme of the book of Luke. So Luke is writing to Theophilus. Okay, you've gotten saved. You become a believer. Now let me give you the details of what has happened when Jesus came. And the purpose of his coming in chapter 19, verse 10, he's come to seek and to save that which was lost. That's a purpose and theme of the Gospel of Luke. Let me do the last paragraph real quick. The last paragraph says in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, if you are in more scholarly circles, you're going to find a big word called synoptic. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are known as the synoptic gospels. Now, we're going to cover John next week, but I will tell you this. Sorry to mess up this clean board, Delmas and Jim, but...
I'll be good to you.
I keep you coming back.
Hey, there you go.
All right. When you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, what you find is Matthew, Mark, and Luke are a lot more similar in the material they present and the perspective from which they come. John, I'm going to say this, it sounds kind of funny, he's the oddball. His perspective is different. His emphasis is different. And because of that, since these three are so similar in their perspective, they're called the synoptics. So if you come across that word in a commentary or something, that's why. Now look, the word synoptic, if you take the word synoptic, it's in your book here. The first part, soon, means together. Optic, right? Optometrist. Optics means like seeing, vision. So basically what it means is, your book says, to see things, but see them together from the same perspective. And since Matthew, Mark, and Luke present the material from a very similar perspective, they're called the synoptics, synoptic gospels. John, odd one out. He doesn't present material the same way, which we'll talk about next week. Because that's what it says. Gospel of John has a very unique point of view, and you'll see that when we get to it next week. So I think that's a pretty good summary so far of where we are. And so you can see that God did not mess up by giving you four different accounts of Jesus' life and ministry. There's a reason and different angles and perspectives that are taken by these different authors. And of course, John's a lot more like... I don't know if the book is going to say this, but from my perspective, I call John a lot more theological gospel. He's a lot more philosophical, theological, trying to explain the deity of Christ, and just more like a theology book compared to these given the facts of his life.